Welcome to Try Not to Blink, a podcast about the ups and downs, ins and outs, news, tips, and tricks of those who live the optometry lifestyle. We'd like to thank the amazing people at Valley Contacts who have made this podcast possible, makers of Stellar Gas Permeable Lenses and the oh-so-incredible Custom Stable Scleral Lens. In case you're wondering, I'm on the East Coast. My name is Dr. James Diem, and I'm joined by my talented co-host, repping the West Coast, Dr. Roya Habibi. What is up, Roya?
It's June, yes. And we're here for you all. Every Monday.
We're in this together.
We're in this together. We're riding together.
And stay safe.
Is that a Peloton talk?
I don't know. I'm just sick of hearing those.
In this together, the new normal. I just want to say, like, screw that. This is not the new normal. I will not call it the new normal. I won't say it. It's not
Press
the new
play.
Normal. Screw that. It's not normal. So we'll get back to normal.
Yep.
But I'm not cool with the new normal talk.
No.
Screw that.
Don't even say it anymore.
No. Won't do it. Zip.
It's June, people. Sun's out. Beautiful. Enjoy it.
June gloom a little bit in Seattle, but I'm feeling it still.
Check some itchy eyeballs.
It is crazy that it is June. But anyways, so I want to introduce, we got a couple intros of series that are going to be going on through our Try Not to Blink episodes in the next coming months. But the first one, it's kind of been a build-up process that we've been working on with one of our solid partners in our mission to provide education for all of our listeners, but we are providing a new marketing minute. So we're going to take a quick minute, like literally a minute, to introduce or provide content for marketing from our partners, Marketing for ECPs. We're going to drop in a couple little snippets of good of marketing for all of you listeners over the next couple episodes or next couple weeks here and there so that you guys can get a little teaser of what Marketing for ECPs can provide. One side note, something that they just started offering literally in the past couple days is something that they call Instagram wallpapers. Brilliant. Wallpaper as in a beautifully designed grid. They have a couple themes. Essentially, it's a press play and go where they can create a Instagram reel for you for your company, which is really awesome if you don't want to do it. So check them out and also listen in.
Hey, everyone. Trudy here from Marketing for ECPs. Is your website performing the way that it should? Did you know that your website is as valuable as your best employee? It's your biggest opportunity in capturing the attention of a potential patient and converting them into a booked patient. What other salesperson works for you 24/7 and says exactly what you want them to say and how you want them to say it? So are you interested in how to turn your website into a sales machine? There are three things that are really important to look for on your website. One is mobile design and load time, robust, unique content, and easy to navigate so that people can book appointments easily. Marketing for ECPs is proud to offer Try Not to Blink show listeners a full complimentary website audit. The audit will assess how efficient and effective your website is and will make recommendations for improvements that will turn into serious results, i.e. more patients and more revenue. We know your practice website is the foundation for all your other marketing efforts. All roads lead to your website. Request a website audit today at marketingforecps.com.
Okay, so some iNews. Obviously appropriate, because I'm basically back in March, and that is exactly where this news came from. I was reading up on the 2020 Glance, another favorite thing that we love to read. And CooperVision actually announced the new option for the Biofinity Toric Multifocal.
Woo.
Booyah.
Are you a Biofinity multifocal fitter?
I have been. You know, I'm not a monthly fitter.
Ever.
I mean, It's a very low, maybe like 10% of my patients wear monthly.
So what's your multifocal choice? Soft. Acuvue?
I go for Acuvue or Total One.
Yeah.
Second tier in my mind would be Clarity and BioTrue. I like the three options with the low, medium, high. People love those two, the Total One and the Acuvue lens. So I like that those options. But I think the option four, I actually have been fitting, I've fit a couple patients pre the C word with the ultra toric multifocal. And I've actually had some patients kind of into it. So yeah, I mean, I actually do love the Biofinity lens. A lot of patients really do like it. And so the option is really nice. And some stats that they give is they show a 93% success rate on initial fitting when you use their fitting guide. So that's pretty legit. And they have a really extensive option that's available for patients. So plus 10 to minus 10. Sphere or sill up to minus 7 or 575, 5 degrees axis, and add powers up to the 250 with the near and distant center, which is pretty cool. So anyways, that'll be awesome. Apparently it's coming out May, which was last month. We're still holding our breath for my site. Pretty sure we've ventured into summer. We say this is summer 2020 yet. I'm not sure.
Yeah, totally. We're there.
I think summer is June 21st.
I don't know.
I'm making that number
up.
Feels
like summer to me.
Regardless, I looked on their website and my site says it's launching spring 2020. So, you know, I'm holding my breath but about to die because it's waiting too long. I feel like it's been too long. That's all I got on that.
It's true.
Anyways, another really interesting thing that I saw also through 2020 glance, but was jaw-dropping, and actually not that surprising when I really think about it, but there was an analysis done through, so iWire announced this, but an analysis done that ophthalmology lost more patient volume due to COVID than any other specialty because of all of the shutdowns and whatnot. So 55% fewer Americans sought hospital care in March through April due to COVID. And also the percentage of people that were going that didn't have health insurance, so uninsured people, significantly higher as well. So that also definitely impacted revenue for healthcare and hospital care in general. So uninsured went up by 114%, revenue down by $60 billion per month. Which is crazy. A couple percentages here. So aside from ophthalmology, don't cheat and look, Jimmy. What are some of the services that you'd think would be impacted by COVID?
Urology.
That was in the 62 percentile. That was the mid-range effect. What else?
Orthopedics.
Orthopedics, true. 75% loss of revenue or service line, whatever. What else?
I mean, I was going to say dermatology, but I feel like you could do that over the phone.
67% down, also in the mid-range. So ophthalmology, spinal care, gynecology, orthopedics, and ENT were all down. Ophthalmology being 81% lost, estimated loss in service line compared to 2019 numbers. Some that barely changed. Newborns, normal newborn babies, 2% change compared to last year. So basically, if you're having a baby, it's coming regardless. Cancer, obstetrics, infectious disease, neonatology, all in the 30 to 20% change. So anyway, it's just kind of interesting to hear, like, A, the fact that ophthalmology and eye care is affected so grossly, and B, really a lot of people have been affected as well. 97% of cataract surgery was canceled during this epidemic or pandemic, I guess. Glaucoma, 88% of billing, which compared to last year's same numbers, is down. So very big group of things that we typically bill for. So anyways, just kind of interesting. Okay, so let's just hop into the meat and potatoes, literally. Now, we formulated a little plan moving forward for a series we're going to spatter around over the next couple weeks. And spatter, yeah. You know, I'm trying to use words all in theme here. But an iDoc cookout, you know? You know, at a cookout or a barbecue, I hate the word potluck, but that's really the concept. We're inviting people to our cookout. Everyone brings their favorite topic to chat about, and then maybe you'll even invite a friend or two afterwards to come after them. That friend could be a classmate, a professor, a student, an all-star, a colleague, whatever you think. And so, obviously, I chose first. And I thought, who better than Ariel Sorenzi? Dr. Ariel Sorenzi, I should say.
That's right.
Ariel.
Some respect.
What's up?
What's up, guys? Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to have you. I'll just say, Jimmy, you don't know because I looped you out of this, except you actually tried to tap into it also, but you didn't do it as well as me. Ariel is the most organized guest we've ever had.
So organized.
She actually sent an audio clip that said, "Hi, this is my audio clip."
Totally misread the email. So maybe organized, but obviously not getting what you were sending me.
I literally opened it in bed and I was like, what is this? I thought it was almost like, you know, sometimes you get like a weird attachment on your email because like your sign off or something. And I opened it and I heard your voice and I was like, oh, it's not what I was expecting, but that's great.
It's me.
Exactly. Love
Hello.
It. Well, for any of you that are not lucky enough to already know her, Ariel is from a little town in West Texas, hence the adorable accent. She went to Texas A&M.
I heard of y'all.
Texas A&M for undergrad, where, fun fact, she was on the water ski team.
Come on.
Which means, aka, you get to go to water tournaments, be in a bathing suit, drink, probably, and probably have an amazing time. But back to the real stuff. She went to Houston for College of Optometry and then UMSL for cornea and contact lens residency. That is where I had the pleasure of meeting you. But then she did the really, actually a really fun thing after residency. She decided, where am I going to go? And her husband and her made an Excel spreadsheet and decided, what city do we want? And like, what are the qualities we want? And they put their pin down in Charlotte, North Carolina, and moved there after her program and has been working at a practice there ever since. And so you're probably wondering, like, what are we going to be talking about? Now, obviously, I kind of alluded to the fact that she did a contact lens residency, and I think you have the coolest story that everyone needs to listen to, particularly people who are interested in any sort of contact lenses or specialty lenses, but we'll get into that in a little bit because that's obviously really cool. But the most important thing is a couple short questions that I'm sure you had know are coming your way, so that all of our listeners can get to know a little bit about you that isn't just about your accolades.
Yes.
And Jimmy gets to start.
Well, since this is a cookout, we'd like to know, what's your favorite grilled food?
Ooh, my favorite grilled food. You know, this is very, both of my answers are probably going to be pretty basic.
So basic.
But there is nothing like a fresh grilled burger, I have to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beef?
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Okay, good. You got my respect. All right, we're good.
No bean. No vegetarian.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. If you only had one condiment to live with for the rest of your life,
yes,
what would it be?
Definitely ketchup. Goes with everything.
It really does.
You can't go wrong with ketchup. Lots of it. What about
gotta be Heinz?
I feel
what about refractive air? Are you a contact lens wearer?
So, fun fact, I have mild keratoconus.
Oh, come on. So are you a form frust?
I am. So, my prescription is really weird. I guess I just have really small eyeballs because I'm like a plus 1
25 with, you know, like $2 of sil in an oblique axis. I have a really weird prescription.
So do you actually usually wear glasses?
I do. I usually wear contacts more. I usually actually wear my sclerals. So
do you? Okay. Yeah. I was wondering what you wear. Okay.
And Valley Contacts, Custom Stable Elite, duh.
Boom shakalaka. Didn't yes.
even have to ask.
That was not even, you know, planted.
Not even scripted.
So seriously, I mean, not too often we get to talk to a fellow eye doc that wears lenses, scleral lenses, on a daily basis. Like, tell us about that. I mean, do you get frustrated with them ever? Are they comfortable? Do you like the insertion removal? I mean, putting the solution in? Give me the down and dirty. Is it, you know, what's the pros and cons?
So the cons are definitely when you already put on your makeup and you get saline all over your face and you have to redo it.
Yes.
pros are just, you know, how clear I see out of those. I do have daily disposables that I wear too, but the clarity is just
what daily
definitely
disposable would you wear?
Acuvue Oasis for astigmatism.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. One day.
Do you think that the different filling solutions make that big of a difference?
Yeah, I think so. I, you know, went cheap at first with the Addy packs and thought, you know, what if I invested in, you know, lacquer pure sclerophyll? And I do feel that my eyes feel better at the end of the day. I haven't got to try Nutrafill yet. I want to try that out.
Yes.
We're going to send you some. We'll get you all some, right. Send you some. Let's make it happen.
We'll coordinate.
Perfect.
It.
Cool.
All right. So you got weird eyes. Good. what's your corneal thickness? Do you know?
Yeah, it is like a little under 5'10".
Okay.
Normal-ish. Right. Mm-hmm. So not changing. Just weird, funky eyes.
Pretty stable?
Yeah, I change a little bit, but nothing crazy.
Huh.
Interesting. Not enough that I'm going to get cross-linking yet. Yeah, not yet.
I like it. Close monitor there. That's important. Well, you know this is coming, but we ask this to all of our guests. What is your spirit animal? The animal that defines your personality and is you encompassed in a creature?
Yeah, this was going to be my second basic answer because I did know this was coming and I thought long and hard about it. And it would be a Labrador dog, you know.
Okay.
I know it's basic, but they're so happy. Like they just love people and they just, I don't know. I always look like they're smiling.
Yeah.
And so do
goofy.
You. You know, I don't know you, but I feel like every time I turn around, I see you. And you're always smiling. You know, you're always doing wonderful things and smiling. You're all over the place. And
I'd say laughing loud too, which kind of resembles maybe a bark. Not really. Not offensively, right? But got a nice loud laugh, which I think is a crucial thing. I have a loud laugh too. I feel like I can say that. So yeah,
people always kind of look at me weird when I'm laughing. I'm like, oh, I guess I was louder than literally everyone else in this big room. Okay.
So. I think I said that I'm my dog too. Not that you said you're my dog, but I feel like I'm a dog too. Because like you're a judge of character, but you're friendly.
Do you have a Labrador Retriever?
Oh yeah, his name's Otis. He's the cutest.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tell us real quick about your husband. What does he do?
So he is I feel like millennials definitely made this a bad term, or you know, our people, but he's an entrepreneur.
Ooh. Okay.
So right now he is, I told Roya a little bit about this. He does something called Turo, if you guys have ever heard of that.
Yes.
Tell
all your listeners about this, because this is really badass.
Yeah. So it's like Airbnb, but for vehicles.
Oh,
and
okay.
Basically you throw your vehicle on there and you rent it out, and we definitely have had a lot of interesting experiences through Turo, but we've enjoyed it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, he sells lots of stuff on eBay, and he's a real estate investor as well. So he's kind of all over the place.
Wow, okay.
They have 30 cars on Turo.
Shut up.
Yeah, we do.
This is just saying, like the family car that they're sharing. This is like an endeavor.
Wow.
I never know what I'm driving to work. Sometimes it's a Kia. Sometimes it's my 4Runner.
No one will ever follow you, though. That's a good thing.
That's right.
It's like you're always escaping the law.
I bet you we don't even have that where I live. Toro. I don't even look that up.
He didn't even think that they had Yelp at his town.
Like, we don't.
They've got everything.
We don't have Yelp.
No, of course they
do. Wow. No, it's T-U-R-O.
Got it. I'm going to look it up right now. Definitely don't have it here. Definitely
Regardless, not. It's brilliant. It's like car sharing.
It is really, yeah, it's a great idea.
It's a great idea. Okay, so on to the fun stuff. We've talked multiple different episodes about things when it comes to specialty lenses, whether it be learning about the research of it or learning about ortho-K or learning about scleral lenses, you know, what are the mistakes people make. We've touched on a lot of these different topics, but what we really haven't touched on is how to really launch a practice from none or like low to like, let's make this a boom in success. And I think that you could tell our listeners a little something about that. So first of all, we'll talk a little bit about both of those, but I want to start a little bit about whatever you think is your favorite. Do you like doing scleral lenses? I mean, you're a scleral lens wearer, or do you like ortho-K better?
Oh gosh, that's so hard because you're giving people vision in such a unique way.
Totally.
Man, I would have to say specialty lenses, like scleral lenses,
totally,
would be my favorite, but it's very close.
So you joined a practice that is a successful practice in the Charlotte area, but and they were doing some scleral specialty lenses and whatnot, but kind of give everyone a little background on what you walked into.
Yeah, so the practice that I started working at did have a handful of patients, and unfortunately it came from a ophthalmologist in town that really did a very poor job on a lot of ocular surgeries. He was very aggressive in doing LASIK, and so we saw, you know, quite a bit of ectasias. So he is not practicing anymore, but we inherited a lot of patients from him. So we had a really, you know, pretty good existing patient base, but I didn't see hardly any new ones coming in. And so I really made it a mission to figure out how we could get more patients to come in. And I really went through three main avenues. One was local ophthalmologist, and I really was pretty bummed to see that a lot of the local ophthalmologists already had either technicians that were fitting their sclerals or some optometrists in house. But I managed to find two of them who, one, didn't take vision insurance, so patients were paying like thousands of dollars out of pocket. So he sent those to me, which I was really thankful for. And then recently there was a new ophthalmologist that joined a practice in Charlotte, and I just tried to get a lunch with her as soon as I could. And I don't know, you know, she probably doesn't know any better about like the optometrist that she's supposed to send to in her practice. I don't know, but I returned the favor by making sure that I refer them cross-linking and cataract surgeries. Like, we have a big dry eye clinic, so conjunctival resection, stuff like that.
What do you do specifically for, you know, it's easy to say, oh yeah, I made an appointment. This sounds so simple, but like, what do you do for those who are listening to actually get that appointment with that new doc in town? Do you reach out on LinkedIn? Do you go to their practice? I mean, what did you physically do to make that happen?
So It is hard to finally get to that doctor, because you really kind of meet a wall with the front desk. One of the practices had a practice liaison that came to us to ask for referrals. So
that works
I was
out.
Kind of like, sure, I will, but can we meet them in person, and specifically ask to meet with that particular doctor? So I would say, if you can find a practice liaison, or if you can just call the practice and ask for the doctor's email and, you know, let them know that it's going to be a coordination of care. It's not just in your best interest, but in theirs as well.
Totally. Love that. So you got these practices going, or you kind of created this new liaison and created these new channels. And any other ways aside from the direct referral?
Mm-hmm. So also local optometrists, ones that just didn't, just had no desire to fit specialty lenses. I actually got this idea from you, Roya, where I typed up some,
Don't make her head bigger. Stop it.
She deserves it.
She doesn't have it.
But I put together some cases from my residency and just gave it to them to look over and saw that. And then also your existing patient base, there's a lot of opportunity for patients that are highly myopic or have a lot of astigmatism, you know, dry eye, and really kind of transforming them into something that would, you know, better allow them to, you know, to see the world better.
Totally.
You know, I think those are great examples. I wonder how you sold the idea of OrthoK, you know, specifically. How do you sell that idea to other providers? Because I think one of the big barriers with other providers is the fact that they just don't even see it as an option, you know, like, because, I mean, really, for someone to do that, they will probably lose out on some revenue in their own office, right? Potentially. They're gonna not sell glasses, or maybe they can, but that's how a lot of people would see it, right? Like, I'm gonna send to this person and then they're not gonna get glasses here or something. That may not be true, and that may not be actually how you discuss that with them. But how do you think that we should approach that? Because I've not done that, and I like to do that.
You mean talking to other optometrists, or what do you mean?
Both optometrists and ophthalmologists.
Oh, right.
So I definitely am aligned with you in that thought process where, you know, why would they want to send them to us if we're going to take them and probably their family? So I kind of took the avenue of, I did a continuing education lecture for our local optometric society to try to educate our community on the importance of it. Because I feel like if people can really understand the importance and other optometrists are doing it, it ultimately makes, you know, you more successful too and helps the common good. So I didn't really, most of my OrthoK patients come from an existing patient base, or other avenues of marketing that we did.
Okay.
I think that's a brilliant point. Actually, I don't even remember who said this back in the day, but I remember hearing somebody tell me that doing things like education or providing CE lectures, you'd think, oh, well, I'm teaching all of these other doctors how to replace me or do my job that I'm trying to teach them. And really, it's not true at all. Really, it's just saying, here, learn this. So ideally, you can at least be familiar with the process. And if not, if you're uncomfortable doing it, you know I'm a somewhat expert in this and you'll send to me. Right? In a good way, right? Like, I think educating our fellow peers on the things that we're passionate about is important to be able to not only lift everyone up in at least the knowledge that something is available, but if not, point everyone in the direction of where to send patients in the future.
Right.
So, sure. Touching on what Jimmy was saying, you joined the practice that you're at right now and made it a goal to make OrthoK a bigger deal at your practice and grew revenue nearly 400% at your practice. Give us a couple fails and a couple wins in learning how to do that.
So a big fail that I had was looking towards the public, I thought, you know, in general, go to a culture that knows a little bit about myopia and sees it as a disease. So I made these brochures and I put them at
Polish people.
What did you say?
Oh, yeah. I'm Polish, so that's why I could
Polish
say
people.
That. I'm not myopic. I don't know.
I was thinking more of the Asians, you know, the Asian population.
Right. That's right.
They're a lot more astute to myopia as a, you know, a problem.
Are you saying Polish people don't understand myopia?
Yes.
Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yeah.
Hold on real quick. Just a real quick diversion from the very, you know, topic. Cause that's what I do. What is your background? What is your genetic makeup? What are you?
So my mom actually came from Germany when she was about 20 years old. So I'm half German and half good old American.
Good old.
And what's
whatever that is.
Good old America.
America.
What about your name? What's your husband?
He's Italian.
Italian. Okay. All right. Got it.
Yeah. My maiden name was Johnson. So hence America.
America. Hence America. Love it. Serenzi. All right. Good. Go ahead. Commence topic.
So I did, you know, some public brochures and that is just does not work. I mean, I sell nothing from it. Also in Charlotte and probably in, you know, bigger communities, which would be worth some people looking into, is there is a Chinese academy that we have here where Chinese children go on the weekends to, do, you know, learn more about their culture and language and all of that good stuff. And so I met with the principal and we coordinated a presentation on myopia management in general. So atropine, multifocals, and orthokeratology.
Can you tell me how that went? Like, how did that go? Like, did you just call in and be like, hey, you know, most Asians are myopic, so I want to come talk to you guys. Like, how did that go? Can you walk me through that?
What's the pitch?
It was like 3 months in the making. I kept on showing up at our Asian library and just and I just kept on trying to meet people and I just met a contact that knew a contact that knew the principal. And that's kind of how it went. But unfortunately it was part of my fail list because
I thought we were on to the successes.
No. Okay. So I did this presentation. It went great. Everybody was engaged. And this, a parent was an ophthalmologist, a glaucoma specialist. She stood up and she unplugged my laptop and plugged hers in and did a case report on a patient that she had that had acanthamoeba from Ortho-K.
Shut up.
Yeah, it was awful.
She like cut you off? Did she cut you off?
You should have plugged your laptop back in and showed her a case of one that is acanthamoeba without a contact lens. Come on.
I know.
Like,
it was literature.
So bad. I hate when oh God.
Wait, so did she just show up just to do that? Like,
yeah,
or was it like eye care day at the Chinese school?
No, she just showed up to do it. There was an email that went out that described, you know, what the presentation was going to be on. And she replied all and was like, orthokeratology is dangerous. You know, I don't know. And then, during my presentation, she kept on interrupting me. I had that Flitcroft, graph up about the relative risk. And she was just reamed me on that and said, kept on saying, you know, as a PhD, I just can't stand misleading literature. And it was intense. I was sweating.
Is she a PhD? She was a PhD and an ophthalmologist?
Mm-hmm. MD, yeah, PhD. She went to a lot of school.
She went to a lot of school.
Rough. And when you're like, those are the kind of people you want to just hand the literature to and be like, what have you read recently? Right.
But yeah. Oh, I had a whole folder of scientific literature that each parent got and it was up to date and she, just completely disregarded it. So
personal opinion, clouding judgment. All of us have had a bad case, right? Like, I mean, maybe not related to acanthamoeba and orthokeratology, but there's bad cases that can happen at any point. But again, they can happen without contact lenses at all. I just literally yesterday had to stay 2 hours late of my shortened clinic hours because a patient with dry eye had a corneal melt and had a hole and needed a glue pack, a corneal whatever.
Stick some glue on that. Pop a lens.
I did
on,
not do that,
fine.
But like I get stayed to help our corneas. It was like a disaster. Poor guy. It was like those things can happen to anyone. So like,
for sure.
You need to keep your own personal opinion out of what literature tells people. And we know
I've
that
I've never heard anybody do that. I hear what's his name, Gary Herzberg. Is that you guys heard of Gary Herzberg?
I don't
right?
know if I have.
Mm-mm. He's like the American Academy or whatever Association of Orthokeratology. So there's like the Orthokeratology Association, right?
Sure.
Where you can get like a fellowship of it or something sure. like mm-hmm. that. He's the head of that, and I always hear him talking about going to the Chinese school. And you got to go to your, first of all, we don't have a Chinese school. We have one Chinese restaurant. That's it. We don't have a Chinese school. But I always wondered what that would be like, you know, like to go and be like, hey, I'm not Chinese, but I know you guys have a high rate of nearsightedness. And so I'm interested in helping that.
No,
so
that's not the way you would say, like, literature says this time.
But you know what I mean, right? I mean, it's a little awkward, but it definitely makes sense. And I've heard people, you know, have success with that. It you know, those folks are definitely more interested in this. I mean, we can't argue that fact. We had somebody on the podcast recently who, you know, she's back and forth to China all the time with Paragon, and you know, it's just totally, you know. It's on fire there, right? I mean, that's where it happens, right?
Well, I think too, because everyone, like a lot of people there already know about it. Here, it's almost like this weird, oh, I can sleep in a contact and have good vision versus there, like they come in asking for it. So right. It's just a totally different for perspective, sure. Probably because they're far more advanced in their like myopia, if we want to use the word epidemic, than we are. Mm-hmm. The percentage is much higher on people who have it.
So did anybody call you from the school? That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Did you get any referrals at all?
I did not. and it was so sad. I was like, man, this is going to be it.
Done with ortho K.
Yeah. But I did do a presentation at the Asian library and one person showed up.
All right. And it was
she ended up.
It was the ophthalmologist.
There again. but that parent ended up joining our practice, and her kid was actually, they were actually going up to New Jersey like every year just to stick with the same doctor. But she was happy to find somebody in Charlotte that, you know, seemed like they knew what they were talking about.
Totally.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what's your pitch? You have someone sitting in your chair. It's a, you know, 8-year-old, he's got a -1.5 power. Last year he was a 1 or 0.75, whatever. What's your pitch to him/mom? How do you say this is a good idea for you?
So one of the things that I've learned with time is to not scare them about the disease side of things, but more so the visual the visual change that happens with time. And a lot of my patients, their parents are emmetropic or low myopes, and very rarely do you find a high, or for me anyways, and those parents that are highly myopic, it's easier for them to understand. So what I like to do is I like to use plus lenses. So I'll start off by saying something like, you know, so-and-so's prescription has, you know, progressed or worsened again this year, and this concerns me, and let me show you why. If he continues along with this trend, then his vision could possibly end up like this. And so I'll show them maybe a year prior with plus lenses. I'll show that year and then projection maybe 2 years out. And that really just rocks patients' world parents' world is this is how your child is going to see the world. But good news is we can slow this down and you have the opportunity to do that for them. Mm-hmm. And that's really what I try to focus on.
I like that. You don't need to scare them with like, the risk is blah, blah, blah percentage of an RD. Really,
yeah.
It's just practical stuff, right?
You don't have to wear contacts. You're going to see great. All that kind of stuff. So what did work? What was the thing that, you know, grew you 400%? Or did you, you know, see only one patient and now you saw 10?
It really was word of mouth more than anything. Yeah. And that really is the, from what I've read, I did a lot of research on marketing. It really is the most powerful method of marketing is word of mouth. And the practice in Ballantyne or other location in South Charlotte, that's 100% how their practice grew. I mean, you can trace like 50 of his ortho-K patients to one mom through connections. Wow. Yeah.
Did you use CDC certified tracers to determine that? This one was sitting next to that one at the restaurant, touched the same spoon. And I'm sorry. It's just the time. But no, not funny. Too soon. I don't know.
Too soon.
Both of those things. But that's, you know that though, right? Like when you have patients that come in, you're like, oh yeah, you're here because of that person who you spoke to at a baseball game or whatever. That's awesome. That's fantastic. So are other people doing it at your office? Are you the only one? Are you the go-to ortho-K doc, or how does that work?
I'm the only one at our location that does it. And in our other location in South Charlotte, there a doctor that's full-time there does orthokeratology as well.
Cool. Do you stay in one office? Do you go back and forth?
I stay in our one location.
And so you when you graduated, you joined this after residency, you joined this practice?
I did.
Cool.
Some Very people cool. too question things like, could I do this if I haven't done a residency? You know, and of course it's easy as the bias of saying, yeah, a residency is great. You know, you and I, we did a residency, Jimmy didn't. All of us are thriving when it comes to specialty lenses. So take that with a grain of salt. Would you say it's totally necessary to truly run the practical side of fitting lenses without a residency? What would you say to those who are kind of on the fence on what to do?
I would say, you know, for orthokeratology anyways, all of the modern designs that are available are meant to be very easy to initially fit. And then you have consultation to help you with any sort of refits. And when I first started, even after a residency, I mean, I had no idea what I was doing and I was nervous. And I had the consultants walk me through everything, like even my topography scales. Like, what do I need to have my topography scales on to see, you know, this lateral decentration better?
What's a topography scale?
Like, what's a scale? Like, high, low? What should it be?
Just kidding.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like the different intervals that it shows the various colors. Yeah. So I don't think that you need a residency at all. Certainly it's nice, but really the most important part is you being a doctor and looking for complications, you know, staining, infiltrates, all that.
There's one other topic I want to talk about, but I don't want to transition to that just yet. I want to ask you a quick question about ortho-K, because I think people get the theory, they get the idea, and this is not meant to, you know, we didn't talk about doing this prior to the talk tonight, but I saw recently, and we had on the podcast recently, someone who works with Paragon. I think they're probably the most well-known ortho-K provider internationally, globally, with CRT. Another big player, which, you know, is I think becoming more well-known right now, and I saw you did some education with them recently in April, I'd like to know just a little bit about Euclid, if you're familiar with Euclid and, you know, some of the designs and what makes it unique. Is, you know, I have a Paragon set. What would make me want to get a Euclid set? Is there, you know, a difference in fitting philosophy? Is it easier? I have no clue.
Yeah, I think, I mean, they're both amazing companies, both amazing people to work with, both on the company side and the consulting side. the difference, the main difference is with Euclid, you send over the topographies, and this might not still be the case, but this is what initially it was and what I've always done is you just send over the topographies and they design a lens for you.
Okay.
So they'll, you know, look at the HVID, the pupil size, the obviously the K's and all that good stuff. So that's probably the main difference.
So no fitting set.
No fitting set.
Okay.
That I'm cool. aware of. Yeah.
Okay.
Another thing too, and you kind of alluded to this as you were saying this, but to put it out really bluntly, Paragon doesn't allow you to change the optic zone, correct? Versus mm-hmm. Euclid, you can adjust that. You can make a larger or smaller optic zone depending on pupil size. Mm-hmm. At least as of right now.
And that's important with a lot of the research that's coming out that's showing maybe low myopes aren't getting the same, you know, peripheral defocus as the higher myopes.
Exactly.
Okay. So it's pretty streamlined as far as the initial fitting process, it sounds like, and then flexibility in design is definitely a key feature, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Is that your go-to, would you say?
I really like to be very hands-on with the fitting process. So okay. I fit more Paragon than I do Euclid, but that's just a preference for me being like to be, you know, in it.
I think it's kind of neat to see the lens on the eye, you know, in the initial evaluation. And I think it's nice for the patient to have some initial like awareness of what the lens feels like too. Like, okay, this is what I'm going to be dealing with. All right. This is what I'm going to sleep in. All right. I can handle that.
No, I like the shock and awe, right? I like, let's commit, spend all your money, come pick it up, be upset for a day or two. I'll see you back when you're the most upset.
Is that what you do?
I do a lot.
You don't put a trial lens on?
Nope. Nah. Why would I torture them? It's like,
I don't know.
I'm going to order based off K's and RX anyway and Topo. Okay. Let's just go all in day one.
Do you have a fitting set? A big old fitting set? No.
I definitely am not at the 400% mark, but I just go K's RX, order me, whether you fall into the sure fit or the not, it doesn't matter to me. Just send me a lens. I don't want to do any of the work. I don't want to clean a lens, none of that business.
Do you ever have a day where you look at a patient, you look at the parent, you look at the RX and you're like, really should talk to them about ortho K. Just not doing it. Just not gonna, it's not even going to put myself through it. You know, I'm just not even going to go down that road. I mean, I had two patients like that today, you know, and I know that's the reason why I'm not 400%, you know, because I'm just not taking the effort, and I should, even especially now, you know, especially now when I do have a little bit more time and I'm, you know, I don't have any students, it's just me with my patients, you know, I really should take the time to, you know, work on my pitch and discussion with them, but how do you fight that? How do you fight, you know, yourself saying, you know, they're definitely not going to do it?
So I made a just a script for myself. And if the technicians are showing me, you know, exactly what's going on and I know I'm going to need to have that talk, I just go into my computer. I just remind myself of that script and I try to make it as efficient as possible. And then I'll ask them to come back for a consultation so we can go into it more thoroughly. Okay. But one of the projects I'm actually working on right now, I should have just done it during quarantine. I don't know why I didn't, but is making like videos to send to patients with some education on it. Because I mean, right now I send them a lot of text, a lot of literature, and I feel like no one actually wants to read that.
So you could make a little TikTok. Jimmy could talk to you about that.
Oh yeah.
Are you TikToking?
I'm not, but I did see your pew 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 one.
Did you like that one?
It was pretty good.
Yeah, it's a 22. Then one of my technicians were like, "Do you know where that actually came from? Do either one of you know where that actually came from?"
My favorite thing is to go down the funnel of each song.
Like, so you do know where that came from, Roya? Yeah, it's kind of it's risque.
Maybe not in alignment with, yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely not in alignment with what the M22 is. But, you know, anyway, it's you should look it up. Everyone should look it up. Go ahead out there and educate yourself. So let's move on to the second topic. So you are, you know, you're in private practice. You're doing a ton of things. So, you know, you and I were chatting and I was like, you know, what makes you special? You know, what kind of cool things are going on in your life right now? And you mentioned in something else beyond, you know, this really awesome story about Ortho K and growing it in your practice. You mentioned allergy testing, which is not something that we've talked about on the podcast, but it is allergy season.
Yes.
And so, you know, I'll tell you what, let me just give you 2 seconds because I just love to talk. So 2 seconds on allergy. I hate allergy. I hate allergic anything because I'll tell you what, I don't really even believe in it, which is stupid. That's a dumb thing to say, but I don't believe in it because I think everybody comes in and tells me they have itchy eyes, they have allergies, and really they have dry eye. You know, it's in the middle of winter and they're telling me, oh, I have, you know, hay fever.
That's
I'm like, no, you don't. You have gosh darn dry eye. You don't have itchy eyes. You don't have allergy. You have dry eye. So anyway, I really don't do a lot of allergy treatment. I really kind of steer people away from it and do dry eye treatment. So
yeah, right. You
tell
love
me about
steroids.
What's going on with you.
That treats allergies too.
Exactly. So that, you're like, that's exactly what I do. Treat.
I'll give you some Lodwax.
That's exactly what I do.
No, but real talk. I think this is legit. So give everyone like a short elevator pitch on what you do. This new thing you have.
So, one of my other passions is treating dry eye. And I found that for a lot of my patients, they were on these chronic antihistamines. And despite max medical therapy, they still were highly symptomatic. And it was very obviously allergies. And when you talk to them about getting, and when you talk to them about immunotherapy options, it's just like, oh, I don't really want to get shots. I don't want to have to go to the doctor every week, yada, yada, yada. No one wants to get injections. So I remembered learning about... Right.
And they're okay with it.
Which I wish we could do.
Amen, sister.
But anyways, I remembered this company called AllerFocus, where it's within the optometry scope if your state can practice injections. You can do the scratch testing and bill for it through medical insurance, and then you can prescribe them sublingual immunotherapy, which will build their tolerance over time. And we've had a handful of patients that have gone into it and have been really successful. And after about 3 months of taking it, they've been able to wean off their antihistamines, which, you know, is really difficult to get a chronic user to do. And we've been pretty successful with it. I mean, of course, there are some that don't see a huge difference, but the ones that do, it's so worth it.
Totally. Super fun. New.
What percentage of patients would you say that you're doing that on? So, I mean, you know, I would say probably in practice like yours, 50% of patients you see in a day have dry eye. Probably large percentage of those patients have allergies. Are you presenting as an option to half your patients in a day? And if so, how many patients in a day are doing it? Or is it more like in a week type measurement, would you be able to say?
I could definitely offer it to more patients, but the ones that I really... So if someone has just seasonal allergies, like in the spring, their allergies are just really bad, then I'm like, okay, just take some Pazeo and you'll be fine. We'll just monitor it during this time. So it's really more so for the chronic users, year-round allergies. So I would say it's not really a ton of patients. It's a really small percentage of our practice, but we've enjoyed what we have done.
Is there a reason? Is that just in your approach right now, or is there a reason from a billing perspective? In other words, to do the testing, does the patient have to satisfy some sort of prerequisite as far as, you know, be on medicine or have, you know, 7 symptoms or I don't know.
I think it's just probably me trying to find really motivated patients more than anything. But like I said, I could probably do a better job of presenting it to more people. But certainly if they haven't met their deductible, it's pretty pricey. Mm-hmm. You charge per unit, which there's 80. And, you know, I think the average Medicare reimbursement is, I think it's like $3. So obviously you'd want to shoot a little bit higher than that. So if they haven't met their deductible, they're looking at a pretty big chunk of an out of pocket cost. Yeah. And then the sublingual therapy itself, it's cash pay. Because it's considered off label.
On that, you don't have to tell us exactly, but maybe like a range somewhere between here and here.
Yeah. Oh, I hope I'm not butchering this, but I feel like it's around $250 for a 3 month supply. It's okay. Really not too
bad. Yeah. No, that's not bad. You know, I think when it comes to allergies, I don't know about either one of you, but we have literally for a town of, you know, probably 30,000 people, two ENTs. So, you know, to get into an ENT is very difficult. And you know, people do want to know, I think, what they're allergic to. You know, do you ever wonder what you're allergic to? You know, like, do you ever have allergy testing? Like, totally. I have discussion with patients all the time and they're just like, no, I just, my primary care just said, you know, take some allergy medicine. I've been taking it for 10 years. Totally. I do nasal sprays, you know, so I think it's a really interesting thing. And, you know, I guess the scope question is the part that probably, you know, would maybe stop a lot of docs from doing it, but very interesting.
Well, thank you so much for bringing all this knowledge to our cookout.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So fun. Great to catch up. Are you providing any other future lectures or CE or anything coming up during this semi-quarantine life for anyone who's looking for more education?
No, I don't have anything in the books right now, but hopefully I will soon.
Well, either way, what we'll do is we're going to link your website for anyone who wants to learn a little more or might reach out for questions. And thank you again for spending your time with us.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Well, that about does it. Before we go, reach out to us for feedback, questions, stories, things you want us to talk about, either through email, on our Instagram or Facebook. We never depart without saying thanks to Valley Contacts for their support, both for the amazing lenses they make and the great people they are to work with. And be sure and tune in and listen to our next episode. But until then, try not to blink.